This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Elizabeth Schneider from Wine for Normal People. How are you, Elizabeth?
Doing great. How are you?
Not too bad, not too bad. We were talking last week about yourself and Wine for Normal People. This week, I wouldn't mind talking a little bit about some of the current trends in industry. You're known for being fairly forthright in your opinions. Let's talk a wee bit about the American wine scene.
Now, again, it's less of an issue where you are. The American wine industry has got problems.
In what way?
Well, remember, we've got this weird three-tier distribution system. Yeah, yeah. So there's a lot of weird ways that you can manipulate the market. And really, you've got these three or four very large companies, E&J Gallo, you have Constellation, which has really sold off a lot of its brands, Kendall Jackson, the wine group, Bronco. These are huge and they dominate so much of the market and it makes it completely unfair. It is a very unlevel playing ground for small producers. In addition, they make it really expensive to distribute wine. And like a small producer in California or in, you know, Chinon is going to have issues getting into a wine shop. And, you know, yes, we have a lot of volume that goes through grocery like you do. And no small producers are in grocery. None. It's all these big brands. Gallo, basically, you could look at the entire thing. It's like Gallo and Concha y Toro. And, you know, I mean, there's like and then there's a couple like huge Prosecco brands. Gallo owns most of them. Or if they don't, the wine group owns the others. So it really is not fair. And then there is I'm sure there's some analogy in the UK. There's certainly parts of Europe that are like this where we call the middle of our country the flyover zone, which is absurd because there are so many wine interested people there, but the wine companies don't care. Importers, it's very hard for them to get people educated. So I am always happy when I see somebody from Nebraska, which is a Midwestern state, or South Dakota, taking one of my classes, because that's part of the beauty of this, right? Is that I can teach people in the middle of a place where they can't get access. So even being able to order wine online, it's restricted also here. But that whole game of being able to manipulate the grocery market, large brands being able to manipulate, and even, you know, a lot of stores, they can provide kind of sneaky incentives. They can provide free, like you buy two cases, we'll give you one free. A lot of states, it's regulated by state. We have 50 states in the United States. It's basically 50 countries. Yeah. So they can play all sorts of games to get their wines in places. And that means that consumer choice is constantly being threatened. In addition, you know, there's all of these other rules about being able to order wine from out of state, which is honestly, if I didn't have that option, I love my local wine shops, but especially during COVID, I'm not going in there. And a lot of them don't have inventory online. So I need to order from places that have these really robust systems. Most of them are in New York or New Jersey, honestly. And I need to be able to look at, you know, because they've got vintage, they've got, you know, they have the producers I'm looking for. They've got, you know, stuff from, Slovenia. I can't get that here. So if I didn't live in a state where I could order wine, I'd be screwed. We'd have to move, honestly. So, I mean, that's really, it sounds, must sound very strange to you.
No, but, I understand the three-tier system, but I thought that it was slowly breaking down. There's been a number of legal cases recently that have sort of been pushing it.
Well, so my friend Tom Wark, who's the head of the National Association of Wine Retailers, has been working for years to fight against this. And the Supreme Court has ruled a number of times that interstate commerce is regulated by the federal government and states cannot mess with that. However, they have been indirect in some of the ways that they have said this. And states are also defying the federal government and saying, we don't want this. So they're very protectionist. And again, we do function like 50 different countries. Don't get me started on the fact that like we really, the United States is a little too big. You know, yeah. I mean, we're not united. So, yeah. I mean, that makes it very difficult because you've got people in very large places like Michigan up in the Northeast. They can't get wine from anywhere. The National Association of Wine Retailers keeps suing them over and over again, and nothing's happening. They won't follow the law. So there's nothing you can do if they won't follow the law. So in that sense, those states are digging in even more. So it's gotten a little bit better for some people, but for most, it's still status quo.
Yeah, I must admit, when we were part of the EU, we could ship wine anywhere in Europe, and it was not a problem. We were shipping wines to people in Germany and Norway, and there was just no red tape. Poor old Jane, we've had clients who want to participate, and the amount of work you've got to do just to ship a couple of hundred mils of wine is horrendous.
It's insane. I mean, it's just insane. Once you start dealing with the legalities and tariffs and things like that, you know, and here it's tax. It's just a nightmare. Yeah. And it just shouldn't be that way. I think the other problem is, you know, wine fundamentally, at least in the US, there's like kind of a movement afoot against alcohol in many respects. Mm. And wine, I feel like, has to be set apart from it. I don't think wine is like the others. I don't think it's like beer or spirits, but we get lumped in with that, you know? So
yeah, although I think after COVID, we're going to be in a roaring 20s. No one's going to listen to any health messages anymore. I mean, they've had their health message. They've had it for 2 years. It's over for them. They've had their chance. It's the roaring 20s, mate. We're going to be partying.
I hope you're right. I really do.
I think so anyway. But tell me, so we've talked about the Wine for Normal People, where you are now. Are you doing anything new or looking at developing the product offering or what you're doing?
Well, I am literally a one-person show. Mm. So it is just me. I don't have a team. I don't even have an assistant right now. Like occasionally I'll hire like a virtual assistant to help me like handle emails. I can't take on anything else than what I do right now. But I am always looking at doing new stuff. You know, I mean, I do run in better times. I run an event with a partner called Underground Wine Events, where we run twice a year. We do a big event for small producers who can't get the distribution again. And, you know, it's really for the audience. It's for my listeners who want to taste these wines. And we bring people to Washington, D.C. We had plans to go on the road in the Midwest, right? These flyover states where nobody wants to go. We wanted to bring our producers there. And so, yeah, in that regard, yes, we'll probably be doing more stuff like that. I'm developing some educational program, which will be determined for consumers, again, not for the trade or industry. I have no interest. I only have interest in wine drinkers. I think they're the best part of the industry besides producers, you know, along with producers. So trying to develop something like that so that if they don't want to take the WSET or they don't want more formal, because that's all it's, you know, you teach it, you know, it's trade oriented. There's a lot of things in there that regular people don't need. Maybe at the first level, it's not as trade oriented, but as you get more involved in it, it doesn't teach some of the practical things that you may need to know as a wine drinker. You know, things like how to order wine in a restaurant or how to shop for wine, you know, things that etiquette, it just doesn't teach those kinds of things that people want to know.
Yeah,
and in a wine course, for regular people, that's what they want to know, right? Like, how should I approach the wine list? What, you know, should I always buy the least expensive wine, or can I do it better than that? So there are other considerations that the industry cannot and should not accommodate. But I think in some ways the WSET has to flex for it, and they shouldn't have to, because they are an industry body that does a really good job of educating industry people. So again, I'm working with a partner to try to see if we can at least provide something that may be a little bit more practical, that doesn't get into like, hey, here is the soil type of the Jura, because I'm pretty sure that most wine drinkers don't need to know that. But
most don't. One thing we do that's worked quite well is we do a one-day wine course, and it's just a whole day of tasting, nice lunch in the middle, and that works really well because we focus on a lot of those practicalities that you don't learn in more formal educational situation. And that's quite a good format for people, particularly because they just come along for the day. They get to drink a lot of wine. They're a little bit lit at the end of it. let's not pretend that they don't. It's partly social for some people. But
that's fun.
Yeah,
right? I mean, that's awesome.
There's some good educational content, though. So you can – that's quite a nice format if you ever thought about anything. Because I think a lot of your stuff is like 2 hours or 3 hours long, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So it could totally fit into that format also. You know, the issue is I don't know how you fit the whole world into – a day.
Oh, you don't. You don't even try and explain the world. What, what you do is you. We don't even talk about regions. We just talk about. Okay, this is what happens when wines age. This is how you can tell if they're going to age. This is how you can tell if it's there. You know, this is what's going on in your mouth. This, if you don't like tannins, this is how you deal with it. You know, all this sort of stuff. We might touch on grape varieties a little bit, but only vaguely. Do you know what I mean? It's all very sensual. What's going on in your mouth and what does that tell you about the wine? And then you don't have to worry about regions and grape varieties because it's only about four or five things you need to know about in your mouth. And then how to apply those things and use them. So it's very practical. So you can do a lot of stuff that, as you're saying, WSD can be a little bit structured and a little bit too deep for some people.
I mean, I like what you're saying because I do think that people also don't trust themselves. You find that, you know, like it's sad to me that like the wine industry has just done this to people where people just, they're like, I think it tastes tart, but I'm not sure. It's like, don't just say it. It's okay. Yeah. Whatever you taste, you taste. Like who would put a piece of chocolate in their mouth and go, it might be sweet. I think maybe. I mean, come on. You know, like wine is all of a sudden, it's like people get around it and they feel really stressed out. It's just all of the, as I say, I think it's the people that drink wine, not the people that make wine, who have created this kind of, you know, insecurity for people. It's a huge barrier, but I like what you're talking about because I think that breaks it down, right? You then walk out of an event like that or a day like that, just saying, hey, you know what? I know what I'm doing. I can identify this, so I walk away knowing, and yeah. I feel good, you know?
Yeah, I think that's the thing, isn't it? You can do formal education, or you can have a bit of fun. And to be honest, I, even though I teach WCT, I prefer having fun with my clients. You know, I've always liked stand-up comedy, and I think that's, if you can introduce that into your tastings, that's a bit of a laugh, really, so...
You got to make fun of the industry. There's so much.
Yeah, and people. There's lots of people to make fun of. So how many shows have you guys done, Wine for Normal People?
So I just released 369.
369, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. We do once a week. When I had babies in 2011 and 2014, there was a decided drop-off of that. You know, what's really weird is like I started the podcast in 2011. I was pregnant and I was afraid to tell people because it was such a different time. You know what I mean? Like I didn't want to tell people. Then I was pregnant again in, you know, 2013, 2014. And I think I announced after I had the baby, but I didn't tell people I was pregnant. I was worried that people were going to be like, oh, you're doing the podcast and you're pregnant. And so then I did a podcast on how I drank while I was pregnant, and that has helped a lot of people. So, I mean, I didn't drink excessively, but I had little, excuse me, I had little tricks that I did to help. Like I bought a small glass and, you know, so I felt like I could get a taste of it. And I shared that with people because I thought it was important. Again, there's so much stigma around it. And I have always said, you know, if you have a high risk pregnancy, you're not going to do that. But I had two really low risk pregnancies. So yes, I had sips of wine.
Okay. It's quite brave to say something like that. That's one of the sort of big unstated, don't say anything along those lines.
But that's what I do, right? I always state the things that nobody else will talk about. I have zero problem with that. Yeah. You know, again, I mean, like right after, you know, when Richard Best quit the Court of Master Sommeliers following, actually at that point, it wasn't even the rape scandal. It was just because there was issues with diversity and the cheating scandal. He had sued, you know, the Court of Master Sommeliers and tried to, he'd been, or pursued, I should say, he didn't sue them, and pursued it, quit. And then he quit. He was the first one to say, I don't want to be a master sommelier anymore. And then after him, like three or four other people said, forget it, I'm out. So, I mean, yeah, I was the first one to have him on because I was like, you got to tell your story, buddy. I mean, this is like, we got to get this out there because, and that it was shortly after that, that I dropped the credential off of, by the way, off of, you know, what I said, what I just say, I'm a certified wine dork. I just didn't want the affiliation.
Yeah, it's a shame that these things happen. I know you're quite forthright. I've been on panels with you before. And I remember after we did one in Verona and Monty Walden. I didn't, you know, Monty. He's
I love Monty.
Yeah, from Jennifer. Afterwards, I was going, Wow, Monty, that was hard to get a word in edgewise over Elizabeth.
And
he said to me, well, you know, was it a problem? I said, look, mate, you're a podcast. If you can't get a word in edgewise, it's your own bloody fault. So, but you're quite a, you know, you're quite a forceful, talkative person, which is brilliant for these sort of things. But what about diversity? What's like over here? The whole wine industry's eaten itself a little bit over this whole diversity thing, and various people are trying to do different things.
I mean, it's like what I said. You know, there are some voices. Julia Coney was at the conference that we were both at, you know, talking about diversity in wine. What I fear, what I think is going to happen, is that it's going to be separate, right? So there'll be a bunch of people doing black wine stuff, and it's not going to integrate with white wine culture or whatever you want to call it. I think, you know, there's no, I think it's going to be separate. I just think it's totally going to be separate. And again, everybody's idea is, hey, you know what? Let's not really deal with it. Let's just give money. We'll just give scholarships to people and get more black people involved.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? If you don't have the conversation that we all sort of have to be together, we can't just set up a separate fund for this, or women, you know, I mean, like, come on. It's absurd to me. And I think that the idea is, yeah, it does suck that there is not more diversity, especially when it doesn't reflect really at least what our country looks like. You know, I mean, one of my big platforms, or one of the things that I have been, I'm trying to figure out how to write an article about this, is that California, like a huge proportion of the California wine industry is made up of Hispanics. Yet where are they? They're nowhere. They're not represented. And our country is going to turn into a minority-majority country, and it's going to be Hispanics or Latinos. So where are they? They're not represented, and no one talks about them. And that's not really fair either. So we are concentrating on all of the wrong things. And why are we not taking the man who is, or woman who has worked in the cellar, who works on the sorting table, who has worked in the vineyards for so many years, and saying, hey, why don't you make your own wine? Why don't you have an opportunity? There's a couple of wineries that allow that. But like, you know, these people are working their butts off for years and years for someone else, when I'm sure that many of them would like the opportunity, but we don't provide money for that. Nobody wants that, right? They want their pickers. They want their, you know. So I find that actually one of the more appalling things is that, you know, the Latinos in our country, they're not getting the opportunities for advancement that they should have in wine. I mean, if we look at the proportion of how many Latinos are involved in the California wine industry, I bet 60% of wineries should be owned by Latinos by that measure, right? I mean, so, but that's not going to happen, because it's all these, you know, with all due respect, rich white men who come from some other part of the country and buy up, because that's who can afford wine. So yeah, that's a problem. And I do think that people now are aware that they have to be PC and don't treat black people like crap when they come to the tasting room and ask them if they want sweet wine, because they may actually be sophisticated buyers. But you know what?
Okay, oh, fine. Don't so be mean to people who like sweet wine. Oh, that's such a sweetest thing to say.
But that is, look, that is the stereotype. I'm just telling you, that's, you know, one of my best friends always says, anytime she goes to a wine event, you know, she is sophisticated. She went to Columbia. She works. She's like the head of a news network. Okay. And she is a black woman. And she says every single time she goes to a wine store, they just point her right to the sweet wine section. And really? She does not like sweet wine. So yeah. That's the, you know, those are the kinds of things that maybe those will alter or shift a little bit, but it's just, it's not going to, I just don't see it, because look who runs these companies. You know, they don't have a vested interest. They'll appoint one black person to their diversity committee and then they'll walk away.
I don't see quite the same problem over here, because I'm dealing with a lot of students, and I see a lot of diversity at the bottom runs. And I'm a bit like you. I don't deal with the high end corporates that much. So I mean, I do, but only from a you know, corporate vent type of situation, not a corporate end of the wine spectrum, so to speak. You know, like your Ernest & Gallos and all that sort of thing. I tend to just, you know, I'll interview someone about their business, but that's about it. I don't really interact with them. So I don't really see that side of the event. And when I'm dealing with people, I only ever see the general public or people who work in companies, and they're not always perfectly represented, but they're not that far off. So
that's pretty good. Yeah. I mean, in the wine industry here, it's a whiteout.
Is it really?
It's true.
Any big plans for 2020? Where are we? 2020?
2021.
Oh, my God.
I mean,
I went into a hole in 2019. I haven't come out. You know?
You're just trying to forget 2020. You know, it's all contingent on whether we can travel, right? It's all contingent on that and whether or not we are going to be able to do, you know, live events and things like that. I really don't know. The one thing that did happen in 2020, which I was really happy about, is that I started doing some partnerships with the wine associations in the EU. So I did a huge public wine class, a virtual wine class for over 500 people live, and then thousands have watched it afterwards on YouTube with the Wines of Alsace. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing another one with Wines of Medoc. So it's great, because the way that it works is they, you know, help me with the content. They give me more information. I get to interview some of the people, but I get to pick, right? They're not forcing it down my throat. And then we do a live class. And I mean, I tell you, like 500 people took that class. It was awesome. And it was about, you know, just about Alsace. And we talked about the wines, and people bought the wines, and it was just really exciting. People got really fired up about Alsace. And I'm excited to do that for Medoc also. I hope one of the places I would love to do that with is Chile, because in the United States, it's kind of died down. But I mean, those kinds of partnerships for me are very meaningful, because it's an opportunity to forward a region. And I like that. I like that a lot. You know, I don't take money from wineries, but to do a partnership with like a Wines of type of thing, I love that, because it helps really educate people on those regions, you know, and gives them deep dive into something. I can't really do that. I could do it on the podcast, but I can't really do it in a class, because people want something more broad. They're not usually looking just for one little area.
So I think what we'll do, Elizabeth, is we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me on.